walking already?
Call the order of this regular assembly meeting of the city of Borough Glendale, Alaska, on January 10th, 2017. Pledge of allegiance this evening will be led by Assemblymember Becky Rooney, after which the invocation will be given by Nancy with the Lutheran Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Gracious God, we give thanks this evening for the gifts of Wrangell, where the beauty and abundance of your goodness is amazing. We welcome your presence at this meeting, and we call on your wisdom and power to guide our thoughts and actions. Help us be aware of the impact that our actions have on this special community. As we go about the business of Wrangell, let us be respectful of one another and of opinions that differ from our own. Keep us humble in our roles to serve and guide Wrangell. In this new year, 2017, we pray the directions that we take and the decisions that we make benefit and protect all our citizens and the gifts of our natural environment. We pray all these things in your Son's name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We do have ceremonial matter to say. Representative Ben Ortiz will give us an update on what's been going on.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, for the opportunity, and assembly members. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and chat with folks here in Wrangell. I'll promise, I know you have looking at your agenda here, you got a busy agenda, a heavy agenda in front of you, so I'll try to be as brief as possible, but I also want to state at the outset that I see this as an opportunity for me to get input from you folks. That's really what I'm here to try to do, is to get input. I've done similar presentations in Heidelberg, in Metlakatla, in front of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly, and in each of those. End was time to try to get input from folks like yourself. So that's what I'm really here to do, is to try to get some input. I guess another way of putting it, marching orders, if you will, for this upcoming legislative session that we're about to start on January 17th. So let me get this going here.
Can you see okay? You want us to shift a bit for you, so yeah, you can around the corner? We can do that.
Okay.
Can you guys move down just a bit, Becky, and get Patty in here too?
Okay. Now,
is that better?
Yeah, much better. Thanks.
So, I have the honor and privilege to have been reelected as the state representative representing District 36, which obviously includes the community of Wrangell. I'm committed to representing Wrangell. Make no mistake about that. I think over my first 2 years, I made several trips here to the community of Wrangell, not just during the campaign, but during the interim as well. Each time made a point to stop in and see Manager Jay Bush. Spoke with the mayor on one or two occasions as well in meetings with Mr. Jay Bush, all with the idea of saying, hey, I'm your representative. I need to represent the interests in the community of Wrangell. And I work hard at that and take that responsibility on. I do not take it lightly, that responsibility that I have to represent Wrangell. This first picture here, of course, is a picture of Shoemaker Bay Harbor. It's an example of, as we enter into this next presentation.
Your slides are off.
Hold on, I got to go backwards here. Wow, that all just jumped on me, but...
Okay. And we're done.
Okay, yeah, that was quick, wasn't it?
Kim, go fix it.
Okay. Pastor, what is the deal with this?
There it is. It's just small. Okay.
All right, now we got to go back to big.
You need a couple of goods.
Kim, you want to help me?
We need a 5-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Molly down here.
Yeah, I know.
Grandpa, you just need to go like this. Okay.
Dan, don't feel bad. This happens when you get past 50.
Yeah. There you go.
That's for sure. Anyway, so this first picture, Shoemaker Bay Harbor, it's the priority, it's been your priority that we try to secure some funding for the rebuild of Shoemaker Bay Harbor. In this year's budget, as it stands right now, there's $5 million in the capital ports and harbors program. And that $5 million is just the amount of money that we need to be able to direct those funds to Shoemaker Bay. So as long as we can keep those funds there in this year's capital budget, you know, that's going to happen. So that's a positive thing for the community of Wrangell. Our job now, when I say our, Senator Stebbins and myself, our job is to do what we can to make sure that those funds remain to the end of the session, and that final budget that passes includes that $5 million for that project to go forward. It's much, much better, though, that the money's there than try to have to argue for that money after the fact. So it's in the governor's budget. It's there now. Somebody's going to have to physically or try to make the move to get those monies out, and that'll be a harder thing to do than to try to add that money in. This year I'm going to be serving as a part of the majority. I will also be on the finance committee, and as such, that should also put me in a better position to help protect those monies that are currently there for Shoemaker Bay, so I'm feeling good about that. Obviously, as well, we have you know, needs in Southeast Alaska in District 36 that relate to our marine highway system. I'm going to be, you know, the last 2 years, I've been successful in restoring some funds to propose cuts to the marine highway system. There were still cuts, but I reduced the level of those cuts. We've seen reduced services already as a result of those cuts. I think my job this year is going to try to maintain that funding level and to try to avoid further cuts to the marine highway system, because I think we're cut to the level that we're really feeling it here in Southeast Alaska and communities like Wrangell. I know that I've heard from different business owners here, bed and breakfast owners in the community of Wrangell, that talk about how they've lost business due to the problems of the marine highway system and the lack of service from the marine highway system. I'm also excited about our fishing industry. I plan to work with the Walker administration on introducing two bills into the legislature which will help enhance our mariculture industry. And for me, I think, you know, whether it's the issues related to transboundary mining, or whether it's working to see adequate funding for state fish and game, I think my job is to try to do what I can to enhance and protect the fishing industry, because that industry produces products that are, you know, the demand for those products is never going to go away. It's only going to get more and more as we move forward into the future here. You know, Asia's population is only going to continue to grow. There's going to only be a continued demand for Southeast Alaskan, for Alaskan seafood products. And so while I'm in office, I'm going to do what I can to try to enhance, protect, enhance, and develop the fishing industry. And this next session, I'm going to be working on two particular bills which will try to help develop mariculture a little bit more here in Southeast Alaska. So I'm positive about the upcoming prospects of this next session. Positive for what it could look like for southern Southeast Alaska. But now we're going to talk a little bit about what we're facing in this upcoming legislative session. This first slide is a slide that shows you the history and the record of where we have been with our state revenue. Our state revenue has primarily come from oil tax revenue. And of course, with the plunge in oil prices, we've seen a significant decline in revenue. You know, there around 2011, 2012, we were bringing in close to $9 billion a year, a little bit greater than that earlier on. That was based on two things. It was based on high oil prices, prices above $100 a barrel, and this is an important thing to remember, much greater production than what we're doing right now. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we were producing 2 billion barrels a day, 2 million barrels a day out of Prudhoe Bay. Now we're down to 500,000 barrels a day, or a little bit less than that. So that's important to remember, especially as if we see prices start to go up. Again, you know, people are going to get excited. Okay, you know, we're going to be able to get out of our problem if prices start to go up. Well, you know, they're going to have to go up way up before we can get out of that deficit spending situation that we've been in, mainly because our production level has fallen off so much. And that's due to the declining productivity at Prudhoe Bay. Just the natural state of things over time, it's become less and less productive. And so, consequently, that explains why we've had that big drop in revenue. This next slide shows you the growth of spending during the times when we had increased revenue. So the blue bar represents the combined budgets of general fund budget for the state of Alaska. So as you see, as we took in more money, we started spending more money. And the graph clearly shows that. And then as you see, as we have declined the revenue, you know, the spending has started to decline significantly. And so, you know, it's just, it's a fact. And, you know, we've seen the impact of those declines in spending. You know, whether it's the Marine Highway System, less funding for our seniors. You know, there hasn't been any agency, there hasn't been any department that hasn't seen a decline in spending over the last several years. In fact, we've gone from a total of $8 billion budget, combined operating capital budget, down to a $4.3 billion budget. So that's talking about a reduction in spending of about 44% decline in spending. Hold on. Gosh, this thing is twitchy. Nice to go fast. So what this next bar shows is not just the operating spending, but it also adds on to it capital budget spending, as well as statewide operating expenses, which then shows you the spending levels that we've been at in relationship to our revenue, even in greater detail. And it adds to it the capital budget, and it adds to it statewide operating expenses. Statewide operating expenses includes our oil tax incentives, our oil tax credits that we have in place, as well as our spending for PERS and TERS operation and spending that. And then there's another category there. I can't quite remember what the third thing is that's a part of that, but it's a small part of that yellow area. But that yellow area represents primarily oil tax credits as well as PERS and TERS obligations. Spending has declined, but not as much as revenue has declined, and that's where we have a problem. But this next graph shows you exactly what I just said. I don't care what department you're talking about, including education, every department has seen declines in spending. Because to get to $4.3 billion of spending from being at $8 billion of spending, you have to do that. So, for example, Fish and Game, I've served on that committee, they're down about 27% over the last 3 years in their funding level. And that's, you know, obviously that's a necessity, but the reality is that we're starting to see spending cuts that is actually having a negative impact on the ability of organizations like Fish and Game to do their job. They're not getting some of the data that they used to be able to get. And so, consequently, there's a negative impact on certain fisheries. Certain fisheries are either being held to much more conservative fish count allowments, or they're not even happening at all because of the fact that Fish and Game isn't able to get some of the data that they need to get. So we're trying to save the state money, but at the same time, if the net result is less fish landings overall statewide and less revenue for fishermen, well, then that has a negative impact on everybody, not just yes, Becky.
I have a question on that last chart. I noticed that the legislature has taken the least amount.
Yes, it has.
And is that on the chopping block this year? Are we going to see some kind of declines?
That is very. I'm glad you brought that up. That is something that, you know, since I've been in office, I've supported different pieces of legislation which have attempted to address that very issue. How to, you know, I think we've got to show the public that, yeah, we're all in this, and this, and the Alaska legislature is in it as well. So to answer your question specifically, I supported last session, and I am supporting this session, a joint a bill that would hold the legislature to its 90-day obligation and basically say, look, if we're not out in 90 days, the governor's budget is what we're going with, and that doesn't mean we're going to hang around and spend even more time. So we're going to push that bill forward as a way to save the state money. Whether that gets support, you know, I don't know. But that's one thing. Another thing is per diem. We're trying to address out-of-state travel and per diem for out-of-state travel, both out-of-state travel, the amount of out-of-state travel, as well as per diem for out-of-state travel and per diem in general. We're trying to address those costs. I do know that we have plans, and I think this one is going to go through immediately at the beginning of the session, to hold the maximum level that staff can make at a certain level. You remember this because you worked up there. The maximum level now will be at, you come in as a 22 and you can't go above that. People have been at a 26, 28, you know, that kind of thing. So these are ways that we're trying to curb some of the legislative spending that we're doing.
That's good.
So, you know, we went from that big revenue time down to no revenue. The green represents the, not no revenue, but represents a little bit over $1 billion a year in oil tax revenue. And so we cut our budget to 4.3, but if you're only taking in 1.5, let's say 1.6 total revenue, and you're still spending 4.3, well, how do you do that? Well, you've been doing it with savings. That pink area there represents every year where we took revenue in, and then we only spent this much, so then the rest we put into savings. This actually represents more savings because there were some bonus years that came in for some different deals, some different ways that the state got some added money. So these were years where we added to our savings account. Yeah, we were spending lots of money, but we were adding to our savings account. The pink represents every time that we added to our savings. And over there in the right, we were adding a lot of savings. Back under Governor Palin, she had us go through a oil tax structure called ACES, and that was really good for the state. Particularly, there was high oil prices, and we were making a progressive amount of money as the price of oil went up. We were getting greater and greater percentages of that oil revenue, when I say we, the state of Alaska. So we were building our savings accounts. At the same time we were spending lots of money, we were still building our savings accounts. That was good, because once we had the drop off in revenue, how have we been funding those deficits? We've been funding those deficits with that little pink area that you're talking about over on the right hand. It shows you all the money that we've been spending in savings to cover our deficits that have been there, which is good, but the problem is that we're running out of those savings, and so we can't continue to do business in that way. We can't continue to have deficits in our budget because the savings are no longer there. There's still some savings. Last time I checked in the what they call the CBR, there's about $5.25 billion there, and in this next, at the end of this next fiscal year, we're going to spend another $2 billion of that, so we're going to have about $3.25 billion or so. So we could do what we have been doing for one more year, maybe 1.5 years, to cover our deficits with savings, but then after that, the savings are gone. And so then, what are we going to do? You know, what choices do we have? We've cut the budget. We're going to continue to cut it some more, but there's only so much you can cut the budget if you still want to have some elements of public safety, if you still want to have some elements of quality education, if you still want to have some payments for health and human services, you have to find some new revenue. So we're going to have to be looking at that. Some people say, well, geez, you know, all you guys got to do is go back to the level of spending that we were at back in the 1970s before oil revenue. Let's go back to that level. Well, these next couple of slides are going to show you that when you factor in inflation and you factor in the growth of the population, that's exactly what we've done. We've cut the spending level to that level. This shows you the historical growth of population. Back in the 70s, we had a little less than 400,000 people. Now we're about 725, 750 million people. in the state of Alaska, so the population has grown. This next slide shows you the value of the dollar. Back in the 70s, you know, you could a dollar would buy you about, you know, the equivalent of, it was about three times as great in value, maybe almost as close as four times as great in value as it is now. So the dollar value has dropped with inflation. That's what inflation is all about. The population has grown. When you factor those two things in, you can see that here in this next slide, that really our spending level over there on the right, FY17, matches fairly closely the spending level of the state of Alaska per capita of the 1979 period, way back in the 70s. So we have cut our budget significantly.
Dan, how do you explain the exponential growth in expenses from 2005 on? I mean, this is a different slide, but the original slide showed fairly explosive growth from 2005 on. And how is that accounted for in terms of that all of a sudden we grew that much in basically 10 years? So in 2005, you see that where we were at, and then our growth has been absolutely astronomical.
You're right, it has. And I think that, you know, I think it's pretty simple. We had the money, and we saw projects, and we saw ways that we could spend the money. And, you know, those yellow areas are important. Remember, those represent the capital budget. And the capital budget, you know, resulted in some projects, statewide projects, that were good to sustain and enhance our infrastructure in the state of Alaska. But they were expensive. You know, at the time, because we had the money, there wasn't a lot of argument against it, and it helped develop our economy and it helped create jobs. You know, the capital budget does a lot to, you know, give people in the state of Alaska construction jobs, helps to grow our economy that way, and helps to establish a more robust infrastructure. I guess we can explain it by simply saying we had the money, so we spent it.
Except that blue represents the cost of government. Correct? That's your operating budget.
Right.
And that's what I'm referring to. The rest I totally get. You spend it because you had it. The blue grew exponentially, and I would imagine some of that is to start to deal with all the capital projects that you developed. But that's your government growth there.
You're right. And it's agency growth and that kind of thing. Did we go past the slide that talked about... I didn't spend a lot of time on it. Hold on. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to distract you too much from your presentation. I was just curious.
No. Let's see. For some reason, I don't have that slide in here. I lost it. It shows you exactly what Assemblyman Mitchell and I talked about. It shows you we are continuing to spend lots of money on education. Education has been cut, but it hasn't, you know, been cut as much as some of the other different agencies, and we've also spent lots of money on health and human services. But that line, it's a bar graph that shows where we spend our money, and by far, the two areas where we spend our money right now the most of our money, by far, it's not even close, education and health and human services. And so I think during that time, for the first time, Steve, we saw increased spending an increased amount in the what's the term called, the student per capita student spending. What's that called, Becky? The
student base allocation.
Yeah, student base allocation. I think that went up for the first time. It was relatively flat. That base allocation number was flat for a number of years, but then in that particular time period you're talking about, we put some significant money into education and into that student base allocation. But we also spent money in other areas as well. I mean, I think government got fat, there's no doubt about it. You know, if we can go from an $8 billion budget down to a $4.3 billion budget, and yeah, we see the impacts of that. I mean, we see less ferry service, we see less opportunities there. But still, you know, I think there's a lot of folks who maybe would say, geez, I haven't felt it. I haven't felt it. Well, why haven't you felt it? Well, then maybe it's because we were pretty fat and we had some waste in that budget. I'm sure that's probably the case. But in any case, we're not there now.
Weren't there a lot of unfunded mandates too that had to do with health and social services and education both? No Child Left Behind came with a ton of things that cost a lot of money. And those,
but that's the problem, is those are unfunded. So
yes,
that
increases your operating costs. So.
Yeah, right. So anyway, sorry for the twitchy slides there and we'll jump around on you. But the point of it is that we're at this point as we enter this legislative session, positive about some of the things here in Southern Southeast Labs, but at the same time, we've still got a $3 billion budget deficit. We're running out of savings. So as we were talking with Assemblyman Mitchell, we're going to have to look at revenue. That's just going to have to be part of the solution. And revenue, I'm talking taxes. I'm talking probably we're going to be looking at a restructure of the PFD, which would cap a permanent fund dividend and use some of those earnings for the first time to go into the operating budget. Depending on which program we could go to, it could generate anywhere between 2.5 to maybe, let's just say $2.5 billion of money that previously had never been spent. It would be permanent fund earnings that would go into the operating fund. So if we do a proposal like that, that $3 billion deficit, that $3.2 billion deficit, depending on what figure you want to use, that suddenly is reduced by $2.5 billion. Not without a cost, though, because up to now, we have used the permanent fund earnings to pay the dividend, and then the excess earnings went back into the permanent fund itself and caused that permanent fund to grow like it's grown. It's now up to a value of about $53 billion. You know, it wasn't that long ago that it was half of that. Well, how did it get so big? Well, we were using those earnings every year, those excess earnings that went on top of the PFD distribution went back into the fund and caused that fund to grow to what it is today, which is a good thing. I'll tell you now that if we go to that PFD restructure, it would be based on a 5% draw on the value of the permanent fund itself. Historically, the permanent fund has earned 8%, so theoretically, you know, year by year, we'd still have 3% that would go back into the fund, so it would grow, but it wouldn't grow as big as it has been growing, or as fast as it has been growing historically, so that would be one of the downsides.
But it is inflation-proofed already.
Right.
On top of that, it's
right.
got a 25% inflation-proofing factor in there.
Right. So,
it grows fast.
Yeah. So in any case, we're going to be looking at that. We're also going to be looking at an income tax, you know, the governor's proposed an income tax. Representative Seaton has a proposal that institutes both an income tax and a permanent fund restructure in the same bill. But in the end, what we're talking about is we're going to be looking at different revenue measures that will impact us all. We're going to now have to start paying for some government services that we've been blessed not to have been paying for. They've been paid for by oil taxes up to this point. Well, those oil tax revenues have gone away. So if we want there to be some level of service, if we want our streets plowed, if we want there to be some level of support for our seniors, if we want some level of, you know, some level of education funding to happen, if we want that to take place, we're going to have to start getting it's going to be. Nobody's happy about it, but that's what it's going to be. Our caucus that's been formed, the majority that's been formed, has been formed on the commitment to come up with a fiscal solution for the state of Alaska. Commitment to make the votes that are necessary in order for that to happen, which are frankly going to be unpopular, but it's going to be the way it is. So that's where we're at. Now, my question is, we're also going to potentially look at, you know, motor fuel tax. We're also going to be looking at a sales tax. So far, I've heard from businesses in this community, businesses in Ketchikan, and throughout our district, that they'd rather have us stay away from sales tax. That's generally where I'm leaning right now as an individual representative, but if you want to tell me some different opinions on that, well, I'd be glad to hear it. Is there any kind of support in this body here for statewide sales tax, which would add to your local sales tax, whatever amount we do? Let's say we had a 3% statewide sales tax. You guys are at 7% right now. We would go to a 10% tax here in the angle. I'm not sure there's much interest in that, is there?
I think we've even set resolutions against that.
Right. So,
well, the other thing is that if would you, because we would drive more sales out of town through the internet at 10%, would you look at taxing internet sales if you brought in a 3% sales tax?
Well, that's the one way that we could have an internet tax is if we, the only way we can have in the state of Alaska an internet tax is if we have a statewide sales tax. That's the only way that we can do it legally.
And would a municipality 7% also be applicable to internet sales?
I don't know about that.
So do you drill it down by state or do you drill it down by municipality?
You do it by state.
Okay.
Yeah, by state. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to tell me, hey, we need to cut the budget some more, tell me, now's the time. Let me know that there would be support for cutting the budget some more. Go ahead.
I really think looking at that graph, there's some of those departments that haven't been cut near as much. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see those cut a little more and bring them more in line, but I think you need to cut till we're bleeding. And then you're going to have to put your taxes on. But I'm kind of leaning to stay away from the sales tax because it does put our merchants mm-hmm. and our businesses at a disadvantage in trying to compete with all of the other markets that are out there.
Anybody in the audience want to weigh in, feel free to do that as well.
The people pay on those taxes. Yeah. Anchorage has zero taxes.
Sales taxes, right.
What's that?
They have zero sales taxes.
I know.
Yeah.
But they've got a lot of other taxes besides that.
They do. They have a high property tax there. Yeah. Property tax.
If you own a snowmobile, you're going to get taxed in Anchorage on your snowmobile.
That's one thing we haven't done here is we haven't got into property taxes like taxing boats, personal property.
Campers.
Also, as you put a 3% tax on that, are you going to cap that like we do in our municipality? Or is that 3% on a $90,000 vehicle?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I haven't looked at the specifics of that sales tax proposal yet, but whether it would cap it at a certain level, I don't know.
Because I know that Wrangell is very competitive. We also have a store in Craig. Wrangell is very competitive with down prices, okay, down south. If you put another 3% on that, we go to 10%. That's very hard to be competitive as merchants.
Sure.
And you're going to drive this municipality, is going to be big ticket items are going to be driven right out of this town. And I mean, your groceries you got to have, other things you don't have to have.
Right.
So that's where I really oppose state sales tax at all. But I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but I really oppose it.
Okay.
Because I just don't see it helping any municipality. It may help the state, but I think you would destroy some towns.
Yeah.
One thing that people don't understand is that the population grew, that the services to provide for those people also grew.
Sure.
And that increased the government budget.
Sure.
In that matter. Personally, I'm all for a state income tax. Mainly, well, I'm retired, so it doesn't. But anyway. These people that work and live in Washington State and work on the pipeline up there stop in Fairbanks, get a cup of coffee at the airport, and then they fly home. That all the money they earn in this state, that's about all they spend. And so, you know, if they work in this state, they should be paying income tax.
Income tax would capture some of that revenue. Yeah, you're right.
And, frankly, you know, that's a deduction out of your federal tax, too. That's how let the federal government help pay for it, too.
Sure. Yeah.
On revenue sharing funds.
Yes.
How many?
In this year's budget, there still continues to be revenue sharing coming back to the communities. It's,
right.
As Manager Javis will tell you, it's been cut back.
Right.
But there's still some element there of revenue sharing in this year's budget. So.
What future do you anticipate?
You know, some people say that it's eventually going to dry up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there again, I think if we can get a fiscal plan together, if we can show that we're on a sustainable path, then it makes it much more likely that things like revenue sharing, there'll always be some sort of revenue sharing, there'll always be some sort of certainty there for some of these different programs. But if we don't create a certainty, if we're like where I am right now, nobody knows what the heck's going to happen. What we can clearly see is our savings are going to run out. I think to answer your question, I don't know what the long-term future of revenue sharing is, but I know that you have a better chance of having programs like revenue sharing there in place if we create a sustainable budget that the state clearly can see this is what their revenue is going to be, and then they can generate what they can shell out in terms of support for governments and programs like
that. And that uncertainty trickles down
right.
to municipalities
right.
when
right.
we generate our budgets.
Right.
Dan?
School districts as well. School
right.
districts have to wait to find out, what the BSA is going to be, and they have to make decisions before they find out, and it's not good for anybody.
Mm-mm.
Our bond rating, statewide bond rating for when the state loans, borrows money, it's gone up here. It's been, our bond rating has gone down, so therefore the cost of money is becoming more, it's more expensive for the state to borrow money, and it's all about the fact that we have this uncertainty that's out there. So it's in everybody's best interest that we do this. It's just going to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan?
Yes.
You guys are looking at creating revenue and cutting taxes and cutting spending, but I would really like you to go back and look at encouraging business. So we have regulations in place that makes it hard to get a business up and get it running. And one thing that I look at is just like a fisherman trying to self-market his product. You have a direct market license. We have to have a processor's license. We have to have an exports license. We have to have a freezer's license.
All and in the name of just trying to...
Just trying to sell the fish. So somehow you need to go back in, and I'm not just picking out one industry. I'm saying let's look at the industries and see if we can't streamline this process. I don't know why we should have to go through four different permits, four different agencies, and fight this battle to sell a fish. If I want to go sell it to the restaurant down the street, you should have something in place that would allow me to do that, to process this fish and sell it, whether it's here or whether it's down on the lower 48, without going through all these hoops and everything else. And I can look at every other industry and I see the same thing. So besides taking a look at just raising revenue and cutting budgets, we need to look at how we can encourage business.
And one way we can encourage business is
cut the regulations or streamline the regulations.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And I'm not seasoned enough yet to know why that's so hard to do, but evidently
it's government.
I guess people create regulations to give themselves a reason to be where they are. Hey, I'm sorry, we've been way more than 15 minutes, Kim. I'm sorry. But is there any other input that you guys want to give me or anybody in the audience?
Yes, Bill.
Danny, what about the PERCs and TERFs that are completely out of whack? How you talked about the funding for various things and the costs are going up. That, to me, seems one of the biggest deficits we have. And how is that going to play into this? Are you guys going to start cutting them out? Are people coming in?
You know that the system has been, it's been closed, right? In other words, there are no longer any new employees are not a part of any defined benefit program or anything like that. So there is no defined benefits anymore for new employees. So that system has been closed off. But you're right, we still have to shore it up. I think it's the best interest
ferry system last year, what we can identify in our business, which is a very small business, in revenues in the hotel costs us $68,000. Because, one, because they changed the schedule, and two, because they were so inconsistent in getting here. And if they could get here, you couldn't get out of here. If I added in what we think we would have made in restaurant sales, we're looking at better than $100,000 in 1 2.5 month season. And if you continue to cut that, that means we have less revenue to pay the city of Wrangell taxes and everything else. So we're at a point in that where if that area gets cut anymore for a transportation system of some kind, whether through Southeast Conference, if it becomes private or whatever is going to happen here, if that system gets cut anymore to these smaller communities, our budget deficits are going to get one hell of a lot worse. Where we think that at the beginning, when it looked like when the ferry system did, oh, geez, our schedule's no good, this is what we're doing, our front desk was inundated with calls of canceling. And this is from June to the end of September. That's when we make all our money. That's when the city of Wrangell makes most of its sales tax revenue and bed tax revenue. So what I'd like to see when you go back is fight like hell for the very business. Because the independent travelers to Wrangell are our lifeblood, along with fishing and other things. We have other industries. So I would just like to see some type of continuity of whatever. I mean,
can I call you to testify, Bill?
Yeah, I don't know. And the other thing is I sit right above the shipyard in Ketchikan, and you know exactly where I live. And they can't crank those two ferries out fast enough, and hopefully there's a third one. But I think you guys need to talk to the rail belt and make them understand how critical.
To them too. I talk a lot to the rail belt, Bill.
it just seems like they think that this is just a major expense. Well, I go to Anchorage quite a few times a year, and I see how nice the roads are, and you can't tell me they were free, especially with the ice heaving and everything else that's going on. And I know you do, Dan. I know that, but I think it's come to a very critical point.
Okay. And a statement like that from a businessman like yourself would be very helpful. So I will try to keep in touch with you as to when I need that statement.
We would definitely appreciate it. You're not part of the inner workings of the city, but we're talking with the city to try to add more rooms. And if I have no ferry system, those rooms aren't being added. And that there again kills our economy.
Sure.
So
if it doesn't happen, the guys don't get money from constructing those rooms, all that stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so we can cut to the point where there's no income to tax. I guess what I'm saying.
Right. So, yeah. Thanks, guys. I'm sorry. It took so long.
Thanks, Dad. Appreciate it.
Yeah, always keep in mind that, I'm only a phone call away. Do not hesitate. Anybody in the audience, anybody here, do not hesitate.